Welcome to Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito from Private Vista. In this podcast, we draw from years of experience as well as guest specialists to help you create the life you imagine. Join us in this journey as we enlighten and empower you to align your lifestyle to help you achieve your goals with a clear picture of your future. Now, let's get to the show.
And welcome to the Dollars and Cents podcast with your host, Nicole Romito. Nicole, I'm very excited to be back with you because this is part two of, I'm going to call it a compelling conversation, but I'm also going to admit it's an uncomfortable conversation because it deals with mortality, not just ours, but those who we love, those who've raised us, and the things that we can do to maybe make it a little bit better. First part was really interesting for those of you who are hearing this podcast and didn't listen to part one. Go ahead and listen to part two and then go back to listen to one. That's perfectly fine. Don't stop what you're doing. Keep listening. So with that admonition, I hand it over to you, Nicole, and you can pick the conversation back up wherever you see fit.
All right. Great. Thanks, Bill. All right. Well, if you didn't listen to part one, I will just let you know that I'm in studio with two of my partners, Jeff Toner and Steve Merdinger. And first, I want to just say we're very excited because this is our 75th episode. So I can't believe we've been doing it for that long, but I'm very excited that clearly there's the interest in it. So Jeff and Steve, I'm here. I'm excited you're here for our 75th episode. No pressure. We need to make it extra fantastic. But to continue our conversation, we were in part one talking about, how to handle. I mean, we're trying to kind of flip the script, and really, when we look at our parents or, you know, the surviving parent, when it gets to the point where they no longer can or should be living alone, in our first episode, we were talking a little bit about how have we gone through the process? What are some of the conversations we've had and how to approach them? And we're going to continue that now with where we left off on the last episode was Steve had brought up, none of us are only children. So while we all shared our part in the process or our experience, all of us have siblings. And, generally speaking, when there's more than one person, you're not always going to agree across the board on what the right decision is or even how to handle things or even prioritize things. So we're going to start off, I think, just like we can expand a little bit more on that. And then we're going to just talk about kind of things to be aware of, lessons learned as we went through this with a parent, things that there really isn't a guidebook for this. And one of the things we were talking about in preparing for the call is really the system isn't here to support us or even our parents who are the ones kind of going through the system. The system is what the system is. And so really, how do you figure out how to best navigate that, both from a cost perspective, but also just as important to make sure your parent is getting the care that they need? So that's kind of where we're going to start off. I think as we all know, the conversation will twist and wind, and we always end up at a good place. So with that, I know, Steve, you were at the end of our last episode kind of just mentioning, you're one of, let's see if I was listening right. I am on cold med still, but one of four. Is that right? Okay. So why don't we kind of pick up there? And then I know Jeff is one of five, and then I'm only one of two. So, but kind of, anytime there's more than one person in the conversation, and especially around a topic like this, which is very emotional and, certainly, I think just brings to light a lot of different stuff, right? The different relationships that each parent has with their kids, the different sibling relationships, different circumstances of the siblings.
Yeah, I would say I don't think there clearly is not a one answer solution or way to deal with it. I guess my bigger point was to the extent that everybody can be on the same page with some of the decisions, it's going to make the conversation with mom or dad and mom and dad that much more effective. It's, as opposed to having some one or two people that are outliers, at all the inflection points. So whether it's that decision to actually, whether you're going to receive care in your home, receive care in a different community, the car, driving, doctors, all that stuff, the more coordinated it can be, I think the better chance you have at it being a smoother transition. I mean, that being said, I think, my experience was that at some point someone's going to be responsible. And Jeff mentioned it earlier in another conversation, it can be a full-time job depending on where they are in that whole spectrum of what they need and how many doctors. And so to the extent you can be on the same page and have that conversation yourself with your siblings before you have it with your folks, I would suggest that'd be a much better chance for a smoother outcome than not.
Yeah. Just to kind of follow up. So, I'm one of five, and the logistical issues we had to deal with in the early part of my mom's was challenging in that my mom was actually a resident of Florida at the time. I had a brother in Georgia, a brother in Philadelphia, a brother in Connecticut, a sister in Chicago, and myself in Chicago. So we talk about, being spread out. And so from a practical standpoint, as we had to deal with this issue, there was layers of issues that, when it became clear she couldn't really be on her own with nobody available close to her. First decision is where do we need to bring her to? So there's, a lot of options there, right? And then when it was decided to move her back closer to the two of us, we made that decision. She was comfortable with that decision. From a practical standpoint, it really ended up falling all on me on a lot of levels. I would say that the good part about my siblings in this was they weren't second guessing anything that I did. So if you are going to have somebody in that sibling situation that takes the lead and is responsible, if you're the other sibling in that, the best thing you can do is be supportive, not to be like, well, I think you're doing the wrong thing. Because if you're not involved day to day in it, you're not seeing the same things everybody else or the person that is seeing it. And I think we could all, my situation wasn't this way, but I think we have heard really bad stories, at least with clients and families, where this is an issue. You've got someone taking, a lot of the load time-wise. Some we've heard financially, but the other people are giving their opinions, because it's their mother too. But, I would just say people need to be careful. If you're that sibling group, figure out a way to communicate with each other that, based on the reality of the circumstances, so that it, everyone stays on the same team.
Yeah, that's very important, because it's certainly an emotional and stressful situation. And I think just either whether it's by areas of knowledge or, like you were saying, geographically, it's going to most likely or commonly fall to one of the siblings, regardless of everyone's desire or intentions of wanting to help out. Yeah. The other thing too, I know we've seen sometimes though, is people will divide and conquer, right? So one person might say, well, I'll do the finances. Another says, hey, okay, I live down the street or 10 minutes away, so I can do all the doctor's appointments. But I do, at least it seems like more often than not, families or the siblings are spread out across a wider swath of the United States. So it makes that harder to do that. So if we're talking about that with the siblings, I know we also talked about, you know, there is oftentimes a progression. So it might be that in the beginning, they're able to stay in their home. They're, you know, maybe you have someone come in to help out with the bathing, making sure they have their meds straight, housekeeping, things like that. What else, as I know we were talking, like some interesting stories about what to, you know, like we said, there's no manual or handbook on how to approach this, and everyone's situation is different. But maybe if we want to share some lessons learned, whether it's through our own navigation of the system or, again, as we've been helping clients.
Yeah, I think, you know, from my perspective, and I think we talked a little bit about it, is you need to have someone or people that are going to be advocates for the parent in the variety of situations. And it's what you don't know that's the problem. And so the examples that I would use are, my mother had fallen in the facility, in the dining facility, and she fractured her pelvis. When they took her to the emergency room, it was determined that it was non-surgical, so they were going to send her home, where clearly, and she, at that point, she was still an independent living. So clearly she couldn't be independent because she couldn't transfer herself. And
right.
So he said, okay, we'll go to the rehab. And the rehab place said, well, that's great. How are you paying for it? It's Medicare. And like, no. In order for Medicare to pay, you have to be in the hospital. I believe it was described as three midnights, so 3 days effectively. So the ER doc said, well, you know, we can help you out here. Virtually every woman 80 years old plus has a urinary tract infection, so let me check. They did, and she did. So, well, we could admit her for that. We can't admit her for the fractured pelvis. We could admit her for that. And this was a Friday night. So
wow.
It's Friday night. We get one midnight. Saturday, Sunday, there's nobody around there. So Sunday night, you know, they figure out what it was with the antibiotics. So now we're 3 days. They can send her to rehab. So it's the things like that that you don't know. The rules around what qualifies for assisted living in a specific facility. So we had had, my father had bought a long-term care policy that had two different benefits. It was a really old policy. It paid X number of years if you were independent, but it would not pay for assisted living unless you were in assisted living. So when I went to the bill, I went to the insurance company and said, hey, either I have to move her a floor to have less care than she's getting, can we just pay it like it's, no, you can't do that. I said to the building, what can we do? And said, there's nothing we can do. A year later, I'm having some other conversation, she needs more care. And so, okay, I guess you have to move it to assisted living then. And so, oh no. And by the way, the apartments on that level were the exact same as the one she was in. The only difference was the floor. So,
oh no,
we got that whole floor reevaluated. It counts as assisted living now. But no one told me. So we were able to leave her where she was. This qualifies as assisted living, and the insurance company's paying
again. And use the benefits, right.
So you really need to, and it is a job to understand the stuff, to know the questions to ask, because they don't tell you. So that would be a couple examples from my end of, and it's not like, okay, every time you do it, you want to check these things, but what you want to do is check the rules. Understand if you have a policy, what does it pay for? What doesn't it pay for? Because it's going to potentially affect decisions you make with respect to where you live, what kind of care you get, all that stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I feel like it might be even different too from each facility or hospital, right? You really are at the luck of the draw of either who you're personally interacting with or who the employees are of the different institutions. So how else could, I guess, maybe people educate themselves or maybe even just know, like, are there certain people you want to approach at, you know, these senior communities or?
I think at the end of the day, I had the similar experience to Steve. Like, you would think there would be at any of these places someone that you could go to and say, hey, I've got a few questions, and they
right.
would be subject matter experts on this, and they would be able to, counsel you, direct you, you know, do whatever. But it isn't set up that way. So I think to some degree, you know, my recommendation would be as active as you can, ask a lot of questions. I think through time, you become a little bit more self-educated and aware. And sometimes it's a little bit of luck of asking the right question at the right time. My mom, you know, in the first, I said, passed away a few months ago when she was 96 and, you know, failing from a lot of things, but dementia was one of her issues. And I literally kept the phone by my bed for the last 2 years and probably got 3 or 4 calls a month in the middle of the night. And they would be calling to inform me most of the time that she had was trying to get out of bed, you know, for whatever reason, had fallen, often, you know, had cut her arm or banged up her head a little bit. And the rule at this particular place was if they thought she banged her head at all, they had to call an ambulance, whisk her off to a hospital, do a complete, you know, CAT scan, brain scan, all this kind of stuff. God. Yeah. So I was like, well, I guess if that's what you have to do, I mean, that's what you have to do. About the 4th or 5th time into this, I'm like, can I ask a question? Like, let's say that you found something in the CAT scan. What are you going to do? And the answer was, we won't do anything. She's too old to go through surgery and do all that kind of stuff. So I said, so why are we doing this? So, you know, I'll sign a form. I'll sign a piece of paper. I'll do whatever. I mean, if you're worried about the liability of this, you know, I'll take you off the hook from a liability standpoint, but it just seems cruel, you know, to be putting someone of my mom's age in an ambulance with all that for something you're not going to do anything about. So again, they're like, well, finally, someone said, you know, and this was just really probably in the last 3 or 4 months of her life, have you ever considered long-term hospice? And I'm like, well, in my mind, hospice was always someone who was literally on, you know, their deathbed. They might right. stop. They said, no, this is different. This is something that, you know, it's a year or two. We just have to know that someone's generally degrading. You know, they're not getting better. And I'm like, well, that's been my mom for the last 2 years. So
yeah,
it would have been good to have this conversation 2 years ago. But I said, you know, what comes with that? And they said, oh, well, we wouldn't have to bring her to the hospital if she falls and bangs her head. We don't have to do any of that stuff. We just have to, you know, I'm like, okay,
yeah.
let's sign up for that. But jeez. Again, it kind of like, even when you have an active advocate, you don't always necessarily get to the answer immediately. It's messy. It's the system is not built to, you know, all of us are generally going through this for the first time, maybe the second time at most. You would think these facilities are going through this, you know, dozens and dozens of time and could guide you, but they really don't. So I think you need to be an advocate for your parents and, you know, try to get as educated as you can. Talk to other people, you know, if you know friends that have gone through this, they might be able to say, you know, tell a story like I just said. And it might, you know, might have some things come to mind as to what things you could consider. But I think advocacy is really critical for parents, especially I told another story just about as my mom aged, her hearing went. So she couldn't hear, even if a doctor was saying, I think you should do this or do that. She could not hear what the doctor was saying. So you needed someone in the room with her taking notes and making sure you understood things. And she really, even if when she could hear, a lot of it as she got into her 90s, she couldn't process it. You know, she couldn't really understand what it meant. So I just think that long-term process of walking side by side and being an advocate is really important.
And I think, Jeff, you raised the issue before, because if they either aren't able to process it or cognitively, because if they're going to see a doctor and they don't describe other medication, that you get doctors, we had this where they're prescribing all this other stuff, and now you Google it and you know, you should never be giving them that together. Like, but no one's telling them.
Right.
And you know, you describe, but they would ask my mom, she'd say, I don't know, her knee hurts. We go to the doctor and say, well, what's wrong? I feel fine. Like, okay. What about your knee? Oh yeah, that does hurt a little bit. So,
yeah,
you know, it's that part of it. And I would also say that we had the exact same experience on the hospice thing, because the other lesson we learned, my mom required two people to transfer her for a while. The director of assisted living changed, a new one comes in and says, either your mom has to be in hospice or she has to leave. Like, what are you talking about? We've been doing this for 6 months. No, the law in Illinois is if you require two people to transfer you, you either have to be in hospice or you cannot be in assisted living. So I said, well, you know, her diagnosis isn't, you know, fatal. I mean, there's no one saying that, you know, life expectancy is coming to an end. They go, no, you don't have to have that. The same thing. I'm like, really? How does that work?
Right.
They tell you, so she got admitted into hospice and all the ancillary stuff we're paying for supplies, bathing, that's all part of it.
Oh, like, wow. Like
that would have been nice to know. So
absolutely.
It is, I think, to Jeff's point also, I mean, ask other people, friends. I mean, if you're of our age group, people are going through it.
And, yeah.
You know, you learn from others' experiences, because it can be a really expensive education.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you probably only use it once or twice, right? So.
Yeah, right. I mean, at most twice, but I think oftentimes just the one time, but still you're right. You're going through it. And I think that it's all the laws are changing, it's such an evolving landscape that I do agree, like, keep talking to the people in your circle to see what they've recently gone through. One resource I found useful is there are people out there who are like aging specialists. And so they are embedded, you know, in the local community, and they'll know the local facilities or rehab centers, you know, whatever it is. And I think that can be helpful as well. At least either A, hey, here's some questions to ask, or, oh yeah, I know that facility. Here's kind of how to navigate it. Now I realize, you know, right, it's, you have to have the resources to be able to pay for it. But that has, I think that can be useful in many cases as well, of helping, here's the questions to ask, or here's kind of how it works at that particular place. Well, I think this has been for all of us, we've been through it personally. Is there anything else that either of you want to share before we wrap up? You know, just kind of like from a lessons learned or?
No, a question that we get to is, you know, what's the best program or the options that my parent does have? And, you know, we could probably cover that, you know, to answer that correctly, you probably need to go through a kind of a thorough discussion. But there are, you know, you're basically going to have to choose, do you want home health care or do you need some sort of, you know, outside facility to care for that. Both of them have different, you know, all of them have pluses and minuses.
Right.
All of them have different kind of financial aspects to them. If you go into the facility kind of approach, it's a very involved, you know, there's different levels of care, as Nicole and Steve have been talking about. There's even different ways that you can buy into or finance those payments into the facilities. And so it's relatively involved, relatively complicated. You know, in our practice, you know, we often have discussions about the financial aspects of this decision, but it probably involves, you know, that's just the money side of things. That's the, how much does it cost? Then you kind of have the qualitative side of things, you know, of what someone wants and what that would require, and the, you know, how are you going to handle all those things. So I would just say if as you kind of sort these issues through, you probably should use, whether it's someone like our firm to help on the financial side, or someone like an advocate that you were talking about, Nicole, that could help, you know, walk you through the choices that exist out there. But you're going to need some time, you know, if you do it correctly. And so, again, this is part of having a conversation with a parent as to what your preferences would be. But then you have to make sure you put on top of that the practical side of it. Someone may say, hey, I want to stay at home, you know, and do that. But that could cost, you know, $300,000 a year to bring in 24/7 home health care. So, you know, maybe a possibility, may not be a possibility. But I think the idea is there's a process that you should go through to come up with the answer for your particular situation, and give yourself enough time to do it so you're comfortable with that decision and feel like you've really vetted, you know, the pluses and minuses of each choice.
Yeah, I agree with that, Jeff, because the other thing I know we've seen probably with our parents' generation is the facilities have evolved greatly from there. Because I know when I was talking with my dad, he eventually had to put his dad in a nursing home because my mom and him could not care for him any longer in the house. And I, you know, go into those nursing homes in the, you know, that would have been in the 80s. And it's just, they're very different now. So I do feel like when you're talking to people of our parents' generation, they went through a different experience or have a different of what that means or looks like. And it doesn't look good. So just to be able to educate them of it's not all like that anymore.
Yeah, I would agree with both of those 100%. And, you know, the sooner you can start looking at them, even if you're way ahead of what they think the curve is,
yeah,
they are involved in the process. They do get a say in what it feels like there, geographically, what it looks like, and it gives you time to work through the options as opposed to something's now happened and now I have a fire drill. That's going to be a much different experience for you.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jeff and Steve. I so appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedules to be here, and even more so of sharing some of your personal experiences. So thank you. It means a lot to me, and I think it'll teach our listeners a lot and give them some really good information to evaluate and just some questions to ask and how to best handle this. So thanks.
Thanks, Nicole. Do we get our 75 episode plaque or something?
You do. Yes.
I think 75 is, you know, like a pin at least, right?
Yeah,
you could wear it around. That's great. Congratulations on that. You know, if I could just summarize this by saying, you know, there's a saying that money is emotional. And clearly this conversation has been very emotional, and the system doesn't care. The system is complex. It's not personal, but people do care. And the nice thing about listening to this podcast, Nicole, is that I walk away from this knowing that you and Jeff and Steve clearly care. And for those of you who are listening to this podcast, I'm sure you picked up on the same thing. So that if you're interested in having a relationship or at least talking with Nicole, and maybe exploring this topic a little further and seeing what they can do to help you, and reach out to them. And Nicole, if they want to do that, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. So any of us are willing to have the conversation. There's two ways I would say to get connected with one of us. You can go to our website, myprivatevista.com. On the homepage, there's a contact us button. You can put in your information, reference this episode. If one of us resonated more than the other, feel free to put that in and we'll get you in contact. Otherwise, you can call us at 312-831-4370. And again, ask to be connected with any one of us, and we're happy to have a conversation.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this and you couldn't write anything down, don't panic. It's in the show notes. So when you're there, we're somewhere where you can, you know, write things down, just go into the show notes and all that contact information will be there for you. The one thing you can do right now, which is really simple, is just hit the follow button. Become a subscriber. Be- And the beauty of that is once you're a subscriber, of course, you won't miss another episode because you'll be notified when new episodes are released. In the meantime, if you like this podcast, please tell people about it. Word of mouth promotion in this world of internet bots and who knows what, telling you what to like, what not to like, and what they thought and what they did, blah, 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 blah. People matter. If that's not clear by this episode, it should abundantly be so. And so we would very much appreciate you telling people you found this podcast useful, informative, that you even just flat out plain like it. Until next time, I'm Bill Tucker. On behalf of Nicole and everybody at My Private Vista, thank you for taking the time to listen, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Dollars and Cents, Creating Your Fulfilled Life with Nicole Romito, sponsored by Private Vista. Visit our website at www.myprivatevista.com or give us a call at 312-831-4370. And don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. Private Vista is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is neither indicative nor a guarantee of future results. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data or other information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analyses, prices, or other data or information contained in this presentation is provided as general market commentary and does not constitute investment advice. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties expressed or implied as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for statements or errors or omissions, or results obtained from the use of this information. Private Vista and Hightower Advisors, LLC assume no liability for action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to this information. The information is provided as of the date referenced. Such data and other information are subject to changes without notice. This was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates.